a passionate instigator and dynamic problem solver, Dr. Kevin Ross Emery, the host of the Dr. Kevin Radio Show, will be taking you outside the box, behind the curtain, and identifying the load of BS we are fed every day. And now, Dr. Kevin.
Hello, hello, hello. My name is not Dr. Kevin. This is Matt Connerton. And if you are a regular listener of the Dr. Kevin Show, you may be familiar with me. I typically join Dr. Kevin the first Thursday of every month, and we have what's usually a political discussion, talking about politics and world events and so forth. And then occasionally I join Dr. Kevin for a supplemental program during the month, or I guest host for Dr. Kevin, because he is a very, very busy man. I'm a very busy man myself, but it kind of works out scheduling-wise, because I do my own program weekdays 4 to 6 p.m. called Matt Connerton Unleashed, 4 to 6 Eastern, which if you happen to be in Manchester, New Hampshire, you can hear me on terrestrial FM radio on WMNH 95.3 FM. But if you're anywhere else in the world, you can listen at ipmnation.com/live1 or on Facebook, on the Matt Connerton Unleashed Facebook page, because we do also go out live on Facebook. So that's how you can find my show. And then so what I do on Thursdays, if Dr. Kevin is going to have me either join him or fill in for him, I just I get off the air with that, and then I hop on and do this program. So always an honor and a privilege that Dr. Kevin does trust me with this with this hour of time. So here I am guest hosting this week. I've been on this show quite a bit recently, because I was on with Dr. Kevin 2 weeks ago. And then before that was the first Thursday of the month, so we were on for that as well. So here we are on the Dr. Kevin Show on Ohm Times Radio. As Dr. Kevin likes to say, changing the world one ohm at a time. So we are supposed to have a guest who's going to be calling in to join me, but the guest has not yet arrived. And as is customary in that situation, if the guest does not arrive, or until the guest arrives, if and when, I will basically treat the show like kind of a bonus edition of my own program, Matt Connerton Unleashed, because sometimes on my show, I'm by myself. Sometimes I have guests and other people who drop in who are considered sort of friends of the show who come in and hang out on the program. But sometimes I'm all alone. And in political talk radio, that is not unusual. A lot of political talk shows, you'll have a host who is by him or herself, and they just kind of talk about whatever is on their mind politically, whatever news stories are interesting to them, and kind of give you their take and whatnot. So that is how I shall treat this until our guest arrives. And if our guest does not arrive, then that's what you get for the full hour. It's funny, too, because I actually, when I'm on my own program, Matt Connerton Unleashed, if it's a Thursday and I'm going to be on the Dr. Kevin Show, I always plug that. So my listeners on my show know to head over to Ohm Times Radio at 6 p.m. But I always tell them, I say, come on over if you just feel like, by the time we get to 6 p.m. that you just have not had your fill of Matt Connerton, and you just desperately need more Matt Connerton, come on over to Ohm Times Radio, because that's where I'll be. But, but I always, and I always tell my listeners too, hey, we'll probably be talking about something that you'll be interested in if you like politics, because that's usually what I discuss with Kevin. Very often the guest is someone politically oriented. And like I said, if there is no guest, this ends up being like a bonus edition of my show. So here we are. So no sign of the guest yet. So I think we'll jump into some stuff. I was just looking online, and kind of some breaking news here from thehill.com, which is one of the websites. It's one of my go-to websites as far as keeping up on what is happening in politics at any given moment. It says here, Senate GOP introduces resolution condemning the House impeachment inquiry. And as you might guess, this is something that we discussed quite a bit on my own program, and Dr. Kevin and I have discussed on many a Thursday on this program, is the ongoing impeachment inquiry. And, you know, what are the prospects of actual impeachment and removal? And my position has been that I don't believe that, well, first of all, let me just preface this by saying, just so everyone is clear, if you're not familiar with me and my politics, where I'm coming from, I'm an independent. I'm neither a Republican or a Democrat, but I do think you can pretty safely say that in these times in which we live, I certainly lean more left than right, and I'm not a big fan of President Trump. to say the least, I'm pretty critical of him. However, I do not believe that he will be impeached and removed from office. My argument has been, you know, I support the impeachment inquiry. I think it got to a point where the Democrats just had no choice. However, I do believe the Senate, the Republican-controlled Senate, assuming this all is done before the election, they will protect him. And this is further evidence of this. You know, they're already moving to protect him. So it says here, yeah, Senate GOP introduces resolution condemning House impeachment inquiry. Senate Republicans introduced a resolution today. So again, this has just happened. This is kind of breaking news, condemning the impeachment inquiry against Trump and calling on the House to hold a formal vote on the inquiry. Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Lindsey Graham, big surprise, Republican of South Carolina, is spearheading the resolution, which is backed by 44 GOP senators, including Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. Graham, during a press conference with reporters, lashed out at the House impeachment inquiry, calling it a secret proceeding and a rogue action that denies due process. He also told reporters, quote, "The process in the House today, I think, is a danger to the future of the presidency," unquote. He argued that under the current procedures, Trump was, quote, "pretty much shut out," and then adding, "God help future presidents." The resolution, if passed, would throw Senate support behind asking the House to, quote, "vote to open a formal impeachment inquiry and provide President Trump with fundamental constitutional protections," unquote, before going further into the impeachment inquiry. Now, before I go any further with this, again, this is from thehill.com. The reason they're doing this, I believe, because this seemed to sort of come out of nowhere, this resolution, and the resolution itself, I mean, doesn't really mean anything. Procedurally, I guess, right? Because the House is going to do what the House is going to do, regardless of what the Senate says about it. I mean, you know, the Senate cannot force the House to change how they're going about this. But this does come after the president has been griping about, you know, he wants the Republicans to do more to protect him. So there you have it. So this is Lindsey Graham and others, and Mitch McConnell, of course, saying, okay, he's complaining. He wants us to do something. So here it is. We're going to do something. So here's what they're doing. So I believe this is really just kind of a show for Trump more than anything. You know, they want to look like, you know, they want to make daddy happy. Let me put it that way, right? Because daddy's upset and he's griping that they're not doing enough. Let's see. The GOP senator is not co-sponsoring the resolution as of Thursday afternoon. And there's a particular reason why I want to go through this. It's a short list. But according to Graham's office, these are the senators who are not co-sponsoring. They're not going along with this resolution. Are Mitt Romney, Republican of Utah, well, they're all Republicans, obviously, Susan Collins of Maine, Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, Cory Gardner of Colorado, Lamar Alexander of Tennessee. I can't believe Lamar Alexander is still around. Mike Enzi of Wyoming, Johnny Isaacson of Georgia, Dan Sullivan of Alaska, and Rob Portman of Ohio. The resolution comes as Republicans have fumed over the House impeachment inquiry. All right, let me back up a little bit. The reason that list of names is important is there has been this idea out there and sort of a hope among those who do want to see Trump impeached and removed. There's sort of this undercurrent of, well, you know, people saying, well, look, there's a good chance it's going to happen because the support for Trump in the Senate is beginning to crack. And when you look at, you know, obviously Republicans in the House actually signed on to and voted for rebuking the president's decision on withdrawing troops from Syria, which we can get into later. What a disaster. Getting out of Syria is a great idea, but you can have the best idea in the world. If you're going to go about it in the dumbest way possible, it suddenly doesn't seem like such a great idea. We can come back to that. But if you notice in the Senate, that condemnation of Trump's withdrawal from Syria has been much more tepid. It is there. It is there. You'd be hard-pressed to find much of anyone, Republican or Democrat, who thinks the way Trump went about that is smart. But it's created this, what I think is a false hope among people that, okay, Trump's support among Republicans in Congress is cracking, and so there may actually be a shot at impeaching him. And I think that's absolutely false. I just don't think it's there. I understand why people find that very tantalizing to believe that. But I think that what we've seen today with the way that the Republicans in the Senate are acquiescing to Trump, they're saying, okay, he's complaining, so let's show him that we're with him. We'll give him that reassurance. And that was the whole point of this resolution today in the Senate. There's a great, I'm kind of jumping around a little bit here, but there was a great opinion piece written by Rich Lowry of National Review. And, you know, Rich Lowry is a conservative, and National Review is a conservative publication. So, you know, I'm not a conservative. So obviously I have a lot of ideological differences with Rich Lowry. However, he's always been a conservative that I've kind of liked. And I enjoy his work because, you know, he's reasonable. He doesn't communicate strictly in talking points, his ideas. You know, he has actual ideas. And I think his political instincts tend to be very spot on. So I've always been interested in what Rich Lowry has to say. And I think he's absolutely right about this. So he has this opinion piece for National Review. I'm sorry, this actually appeared in Politico because he's also a contributing editor with Politico. And this is titled "The Fantasy of Republicans Ditching Trump." And it's very short. Let's see if we can get this in before the break. But here's what he says, and I think he's right. Republican senators will soon be receiving an invitation to tear apart the Republican Party ahead of the 2020 elections, and they are going to decline to accept it. It's a trope of pro-impeachment commentary that it should be simple for Republican senators to swap out President Donald Trump, who puts them in an awkward position every day, for Vice President Mike Pence and an upstanding Reagan conservative who could start with a fresh slate in the run-up to the 2020 election. This idea's only flaw is that it is entirely removed from reality. If Republican senators vote to remove Trump on anything like the current facts, even the worst possible interpretation of them, it would leave the GOP a smoldering ruin. It won't matter who the Democrats nominate in 2020. They could run Bernie Sanders on a ticket balanced by Elizabeth Warren and promise to make AOC Secretary of Treasury and Ilhan Omar Secretary of Defense, and they'd still win. A significant portion of the Republican Party would consider a Senate conviction of Trump a dastardly betrayal. Perhaps most would get over it as partisan feelings kicked in around a national election, but not all. And so a party that has managed to win the popular vote in a presidential election only once since 1988 would hurtle toward November 2020 divided. How does anyone think that would turn out? A lot of Trump supporters are going to want to blame the Republican establishment, even if Trump loses in 2020 fair and square, with the backing of the United Party apparatus. Imagine what they will think if a couple dozen Republican senators decide to deny him the opportunity to run for re-election without a single Republican voter having a say on his ultimate fate. It's hard to come up with any scenario better designed to stoke the populist furies of Trump, of Trump's most devoted voters. Trump himself isn't going to get convicted by the Senate and say, well, I'm a little disappointed in your judgment, to be honest, but it was a close call, and Mike Pence is a great guy, and I'm just grateful I had the opportunity to serve this country in the White House for more than 3 years. He won't go away quietly to lick his wounds. He won't delete his Twitter account. He won't make it easy on anyone. He will vent his anger and resentment at every opportunity. It will be, quote, human scum every single day. And it's not as though the media is going to lose its interest in the most luridly telegenic politician that we've ever seen. The mainstream press would be delighted to see Trump destroyed, yet sad to bid him farewell. The obvious way to square the circle would be to continue to give Trump lavish coverage in his post-presidency. Keep you out of the White House, but still driving, screaming CNN chyrons every other hour. In other words, Trump's removal wouldn't be a fresh start for Pence and the GOP in an accelerated post-Trump era. It would be more like getting stuck in the poisonous epilogue of the Trump era, awaiting the inevitable advent of the Elizabeth Warren, Joe Biden, or Pete Buttigieg era. And this is why the cracks in the Republican Senate quote-unquote coverage is so ridiculous and overwrought. It depends on the idea that GOP senators who, it is true, are continually frustrated by Trump's controversies, are on the verge of engineering their party's own destruction. There was even some, quote, cracks showing analysis around Mitch McConnell saying the other day that he didn't remember a conversation with Trump, as recounted by the president, praising his call with the Ukraine president. The obvious explanation is that McConnell didn't really recall such a conversation, not that the shrewdest, most realistic politician in Washington was getting ready to immolate himself and his party as soon as the articles of impeachment arrived from the House. Mitt Romney has gotten a lot of coverage for his excoriating comments about the Ukraine mess and the Syria pullout. He really might vote to convict when it comes to it, but he's not a broad indicator of the direction of the party. As goes Romney on impeachment, so goes Romney on impeachment. It's possible to come up with a scenario in which Ukraine developments are much worse than it's possible to imagine right now, and Trump's support craters even among Republicans. Then you might have GOP senators voting to convict. This is just another path to the destruction of the party's hopes in 2020, because there's no way it would snap back from a Nixonian meltdown at the top in less than a year. In short, Mike Pence might be elected president one day, but it's not going to be while presiding over a party that has just jettisoned Donald Trump. So there you go. That's Rich Lowry's analysis. And I think he's right. And we are up against a break. I hear the music. So we will be right back. You're listening to the Dr. Kevin Show on Ohm Times Radio. I am Matt Connerton filling in for Dr. Kevin, and I'll be right back. Don't go away.
Conscious Media for Conscious Minds. Ohm Times. Have you ever wondered how to change your love paradigm? The secret key is finding a love partnership, not just a regular connection. How do you find these? Through conscious relationships. Ascending Hearts Dating is a dating site for people like you that believes in second chances and a different type of spiritual connection. Try Ascending Hearts for free today at ascendinghearts.com and change your love paradigm. Ascending Hearts, the premier dating community for the spiritually awake.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Ohm Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going Om? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers, pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. They have to live it. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Dr. Kevin Show. We are live on Ohm Times Radio, as Dr. Kevin likes to say, changing the world one ohm at a time. I try to say it like he does. My name is Matt Connerton. I am guest hosting for Dr. Kevin this week. I am alone, all by myself, as the song goes, but that's okay. I'm used to it. Sometimes on my own program, I'm alone. I am the host of Matt Connerton Unleashed, which you can hear weekdays 4 to 6 p.m. at ipmnation.com and also on the Matt Connerton Unleashed Facebook page. But I do join Dr. Kevin at least once a month here on the program. And occasionally I even have the honor and privilege of filling in for him when he has a scheduling conflict and cannot be here. And so kind of treating this like a bonus hour of my show here on the Dr. Kevin Show on Ohm Times Radio. So, you know, my specialty is politics, and, you know, I don't know if y'all have noticed, but seems like there's always plenty to talk about when it comes to politics. There's always a myriad of things going on. So right before the break, I read, I actually managed to get the whole thing in. I can talk pretty fast when I need to, but I was reading Rich Lowry's column in Politico about, you know, the fantasy of all these Republicans who were going to break with Trump, and that was going to lead to his impeachment. And Rich Lowry just doesn't see it happening, and I don't either. And I don't know. Look, it really is a catch-22, isn't it? If Trump were to be impeached and removed from office, then we end up with President Pence, you know, unless Mike Pence also is impeached and removed from office. Trump at one point actually did, if you remember, he kind of threw, I don't think it was his intention. Some people think it was. I don't think it was. I think he just was being clumsy and foolish, but he kind of threw Pence under the bus a little bit, saying, hey, you know, Mike Pence also had conversations with the Ukrainians. Maybe you should look at those transcripts. But it's, I don't quite know what's worse. And Trump or Pence. And I'll tell you why, and I'll tell you what really, really frightens me about Pence. Because it's deeper than just, oh, he's an evangelical Christian. Is he going to try to roll back protections for LGBT people or LGBTQ or LGBT plus? I think that's what we say now, just so we're definitely not leaving anyone out. It's hard to keep up with it all, but I do support those. I support everyone having the same rights and protections. No one should be discriminated against here in the United States or anywhere, in my view. You know, there are concerns about a Mike Pence presidency. And I think Pence, at the end of the day, may be more dangerous than Trump. Now, Trump, I think, has proven himself to be dangerous in a very specific instance, because I'll be honest with you, I didn't think I want to be precise with how I say this. I didn't particularly perceive Trump to be as dangerous as maybe some others have. Prior to recently, I know a lot of people think Trump is you know, going to get us into a nuclear war somehow or some sort of global crisis that will bring about an existential threat to the United States and so forth. I've always thought that that was a little bit overwrought because I had always thought, well, the thing about Trump is, I mean, here's something good about him, for real. And I don't mean this sarcastically. I'm not being flippant about it. He doesn't seem to have an overriding desire to continue with interventionism in terms of, you know, he hasn't invaded anybody yet, and he doesn't seem to have any particular appetite to do so, which is good. There was a lot of saber rattling at one point over Venezuela, which I thought was very strange. That seems to have gone away. You know, he was at one point having his Twitter war with Kim Jong-un, and of course now they're best friends and they fell in love and all that, even though I think Kim has completely played him. But, you know, at least they're not threatening each other with nuclear war on Twitter. So, you know, I try to see the glass half full when I can. You know, there's been some other things. I mean, I was getting very nervous about Iran at one point, but I don't think Trump really – I mean, Trump did call off that strike at the last minute. You know, we were almost going to strike at Iran. And then Trump called it off, which was the right decision, although I don't want to give him too much credit because I don't understand how it ever even got that far to begin with, where Trump had to call it off at the last minute, pretty much, you know, literally the last minute. So I have not seen Trump. I have not tended to see Trump as quite as dangerous as some people have seen him from the beginning, although my thinking has changed a little bit, because I look at the Syria thing and it's like, I mentioned this briefly before the break, but to continue the thought, like I said, a great idea is a great idea, but if you take a great idea and you execute that idea in the most haphazard, reckless, just ham-fisted way possible, that great idea doesn't seem so great anymore. You know, you can have the best idea in the world, but if you execute it in a really dumb way, then what have you really done? So, vis-a-vis Syria, I think getting out, I've always supported getting out of Syria. And this sort of overarching concept of we need to pull back from the Middle East. Agreed. I agree. In fact, I would say, he's sort of fallen out of favor for various reasons. But, you know, Ron Paul, when he would run for president, he used to talk about the concept of blowback. How in the Middle East we create this, we create our own problems. Our presence there and our interactions there, and some of the things we've done, you know, like invading Iraq, for example, and Afghanistan, you know, we've done things that actually create larger problems than they solve. You know, today, and this really escalated, I mean, it started with George W. Bush and then escalated under Obama. And I'm not even sure how much of this we're doing now, but, you know, there are young people in Afghanistan, walking around in Afghanistan, who were not born yet when 9/11 happened, and they don't know anything about 9/11, and they have no idea why something called a drone that was piloted remotely by someone called an American, why this particular piece of equipment came along one day and blew away this kid's entire family. You know what I mean? There's people walking around in Afghanistan who are just too young to know anything about anything, and all they know is that for some reason, America hates them and wants to kill them, and they don't know why. Right. And so the idea, the overarching principle that we need to pull back and we need to limit our engagement and our intervention, certainly our intervention, that's a great idea. Trump's not wrong on that. In fact, going into 2016, well, going into 2016, I didn't think Trump had any chance of winning. But when Trump did win, one of the things I and others, in my discussions with others, you know, one of the things that I tried to take some solace in was, well, okay, at least I don't think Trump's going to want to invade anybody if his rhetoric was at all honest. And whereas I think Hillary might have. Hillary Clinton, I've always said, you know, very pro-war, certainly plugged into the military-industrial complex. And Hillary Clinton, effectively a neoconservative. I think she would have been very comfortable on the foreign policy team of the George W. Bush administration, to be quite honest. So I kind of tried to look at it that way and say, okay, well, I don't think the Trump presidency is a great thing. I don't feel good about it, but maybe it'll be okay because maybe we'll get a more reasonable foreign policy and so forth. You know, and Trump did talk about during the campaign of getting out of Syria. Hillary talked about wanting to put a no-fly zone over northern Syria, and I thought that was a terrible idea. You know, and a lot of Republicans wanted to do that too. But I thought that was a terrible idea. Put up a no-fly zone. And then what happens if a Russian plane either intentionally or inadvertently violates the no-fly zone? Do we shoot it down? And then what happens once we've shot down a Russian plane? That opens the door to things I don't even want to contemplate. So I like the idea. I liked it then. I like it now. I like the idea of getting out of Syria. Great idea. But like I said, you can have the best idea in the world, but if you're going to execute it in a stupid way, without thinking it through, without doing your due diligence, without some planning, you just one day just decide you're going to do something with no preparation, no consulting with anyone to figure out how to go about it. You know, it's no different than, I mean, Trump is allegedly this great businessman, which I think most of us who are not deluded into believing in the guy knows he is not a great businessman. He's actually failed many times over. I mean, the guy manages to bankrupt casinos. So how successful is he really? But, you know, if you are a business person, you know that you might have a great business idea. Whether it's for a new business, whether it's for expanding your existing business, whatever it may be, any kind of venture, you know that you don't just say, okay, I've got a great idea, and then you just kind of throw it against the wall and hope it works out. There's planning. You have to do your due diligence. You got to figure out what you're doing before you do it. You got to figure out how you're going to do it. So Trump, I mean, it's so heartbreaking because it all could have been avoided so easily. Trump just decides, probably as a means of distracting from impeachment or whatever his reason was, apparently without even really discussing it with the military and probably not much with his own foreign policy team, he just decides one day, okay, that's it. I'm going to announce we're getting out of Syria. And that unleashes chaos. And then we find out that it would appear that he was told in his phone call with Erdogan of Turkey that the Turks were coming in. And Trump said, all right, well, let me get out of the way first. And now, I don't know. I'd like to see that transcript. I mean, I'd like to see the Ukraine transcript. And before anyone says, well, Matt, we did see the transcript of his call with Zelensky of Ukraine. No, we didn't. We saw a heavily edited version of it, apparently. We didn't see the actual transcript, right? But I'd like to see the transcript of Trump's call with Erdogan. But, you know, I've read many scenarios. I mean, you can call it Monday morning quarterbacking or whatever you want to call it, but I've read many scenarios of how this could have been done. Because, no, it's not like we were going to be stuck there forever unless we did something drastic and just said, okay, we're leaving. But, I mean, a scenario that I think would have worked, and this is just one example, is why not? I mean, Turkey's a NATO ally. Erdogan's a thug, but Turkey is a NATO ally. Why not sit down with Erdogan? Why not sit down with someone representing the Kurds? You don't invite Assad, because screw that guy. We don't want anything to do with him. But you sit down with Erdogan. You sit down with someone from the representing the Kurds. And you say, okay, here's what we want to do. The United States wants to leave. We want to leave. We also want to protect the Kurds because they're our allies. And so, President Erdogan, you have to agree, you know, if you're going to move in and help with this and help with keeping an eye on these ISIS prisoners, you know, that we don't want them to go free and whatnot. So so we got to figure this out. We got to figure out a plan. And President Erdogan, you have to guarantee that you are not going to come in and just start slaughtering the Kurds. And, you know, maybe we can kind of move you in, but you got to guarantee everyone's security if you're going to take over for us, essentially. And then once we're satisfied that that is in place and that you're committed to that, then we can look at leaving and so forth. And it's a plan, and you have a strategy, and this goes on for maybe 6 months to a year, however long it takes. Instead, Trump just says, we're leaving, and we start leaving. And Turkey comes in, and they start killing Kurds. And then you have all the MAGA people who are incapable of any objectivity, of any critical thinking whatsoever when it comes to anything Trump does. Because to them, Trump is their Lord and Savior. So they're just like, I mean, and I interact with them during my show and on social media. You know, MAGA people are just like, hey, this is great. Trump promised we'd get out of Syria, and he's fulfilling his campaign promise. What's the problem? And, of course, the problem is, well, there's the Kurds are our allies, and we left them for dead. And the Russians are filling that power vacuum, and the Iranians and everyone else. And there's ISIS prisoners going free. It's a disaster. But you can't tell these people anything about their exalted hero. We got one more break, and we'll be right back. More to come on the Dr. Kevin Show on Ohm Times Radio. Stay with me.
The Real Conscious Connection. Ohm Times Radio. IOM FM. The number one reason girls drop out of school in sub-Saharan Africa is lack of access to feminine hygiene products. The Pads for Schoolgirls Project, an outreach of Humanity Healing International, is changing this paradigm by setting up sewing programs at schools, teaching girls a vocational skill, while producing the reusable pads that help keep them attending classes. The girls pay it forward by making and giving pad kits to other girls in need. To learn more, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
911, what is your emergency?
My kid shot himself.
All right, where's the wounds?
911, what's your emergency?
Please help. My son shot his brother.
911, what is your emergency?
Okay.
911, please state your emergency.
Every day, 8 kids and teens are unintentionally killed or injured by loaded and unlocked guns.
It wasn't locked.
Learn how to make your home safer at endfamilyfire.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and End Family Fire.
Welcome back, everybody, as we cruise into our final segment of the Dr. Kevin Show this week on Ohm Times Radio. As Dr. Kevin likes to say, changing the world one ohm at a time. I clearly am not Dr. Kevin. My name is Matt Connerton, and I host a program called Matt Connerton Unleashed. So if you've been listening to tonight's show and you like what you hear and you want to hear more of my perspective and interact with me during a program and so forth, Matt Connerton Unleashed is live weekdays, 4 to 6 p.m. You can listen on ipmnation.com. You can also get the show on Facebook on the Matt Connerton Unleashed Facebook page. And as I say, we are live weekdays, 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern time. And would love to have you join me for that. And then, of course, Dr. Kevin extends to me the honor and privilege of joining him the first Thursday of every month right here on the Dr. Kevin Show. And occasionally he asks me to fill in and guest host as well. So very happy to be doing that this evening here on the Dr. Kevin Show on the Ohm Times Radio Network. Always a pleasure. And it kind of gives me a chance to do, you know, an extra hour of radio. So it's my favorite thing in the world to do. I love being on air. So it's wonderful to have you all with me. And I'm sure Dr. Kevin will be back soon. I'm not sure. You know, he never did quite tell me what it is that he had to do this evening. But I'm sure it was important. He's a very, very busy person, which is great. Before we move on, by the way, during the break, Chris did remind me that, you know, Trump, he's not even actually bringing these troops home. Many of them are being redeployed to Saudi Arabia, which Trump then sort of said, well, to justify that, the Saudis are actually paying us for this. So what the Saudis are paying for, I don't know if they're literally paying us. But what the Saudis are, in fact, getting is help with their continuing genocide in Yemen. So we're now a part of that, even more so than we were, as we continue to help the Saudis, who are, of course, state sponsors of terror. But they're our buddies. Hey, can anyone, by the way, explain to me how is it that, because, you know, the excuse is always, well, we depend on their oil. And yet, I also thought, because the same people who will tell you that will also tell you that we are now net exporters of oil. So if we're net exporters of oil, so we have plenty of oil, why are we still dependent on the Saudis for oil? But anyway, Chris also pointed out, too, don't forget about Trump Tower Istanbul in Turkey and how that figures into all this. But I'll tell you, like I was saying before the break, you know, MAGA people will they don't accept any negative information about their exalted hero, their Lord and Savior, Donald John Trump. And they just say, they'll tell you all the time, hey, look, he said he was going to get us out of Syria. And it's a campaign promise fulfilled. So what's your beef? I mean, that's their attitude about it. And that's why, too, you know, I believe because we started out the top of the show talking about the impeachment inquiry and so forth. I believe that, you know, Trump has a great shot at winning re-election, because once someone supports Trump, generally, there's nothing this man can ever do that will dissuade them from continuing to support him. It's like nothing I've ever seen. I mean, Republicans really seem to kind of worship at the altar of Reagan, Saint Reagan, the patron saint of conservatism. And by the way, there was a lot of what I would consider blind loyalty on the left to Obama, who, you know, let me down in some key ways. There were some things I wasn't happy with Obama over, but there were a lot of people on the left who just, you know, would not question anything about Obama. So we've seen examples of this before. But I've never seen it like this. It's like a cult. I mean, they will not acknowledge anything. They will not question anything that could be amiss about their leader, the chosen one, Donald Trump. It is incredible. And I think he has a great shot at reelection in spite of everything, because what I think could very well happen is he will lose the popular vote again, probably by a larger margin this time, but he'll still carry all the same states. His approval rating among Republicans continues to be typically between 85 and 90%. That's his approval rating among Republicans. And, you know, I always go back to the example of the farmers in the Midwest who have been decimated by Trump's trade war. Trump's trade war with China has been brutal on the agriculture sector of the United States economy. Farming bankruptcies are in record numbers. It will take a decade after Trump leaves for our nation's farms to even begin to recover financially from what has been done to them. And yet, if you look at polling data among these farmers, they still support him. They don't blame Trump. They blame Washington. They look for somebody else to blame. But they won't blame Trump. They love him. Most Republicans I know don't just like Donald Trump. Most Republicans I know are deeply in love with him, and they're blinded by that love. I don't know if it's, you know, the casual racism or what, but they just love him. And the reason I always go back to the example of the farmers is, so these people are having their livelihoods ruined, their lives destroyed by the policies of this president, and they cannot accept that it's his fault. How do you beat somebody like that? How do you beat someone who, if you're a supporter of his, he can literally ruin your life? And you'll say, well, you know, yeah, it kind of sucks. My livelihood's been destroyed and I lost my family farm and everything sucks, but he's my president and I support him. I've never seen anything like it. How do you beat somebody like that? I don't know that you can. I don't know that you can. So, but I realized too, I never quite finished what I was saying earlier about Mike Pence. Why I think Mike Pence might ultimately be more dangerous than Trump. It has long been my policy, and some people will get mad at me for saying this because they'll think that I'm, you know, being anti-Christian or whatever. And I'm, you know, I'm not personally a man of faith, but I generally respect what everyone wants to believe. Hey, that's your, you know, whatever gets you through the day. As long as you're not hurting anybody, it's all right with me. But I do believe that it is intrinsically dangerous, existentially dangerous, to have an evangelical Christian in the White House. And I got really nervous about this, for example, back in 2008, when it was McCain versus Obama, because McCain had chosen Sarah Palin as his running mate. And, you know, if something were to happen to McCain, then, you know, it's such a cliche, but, you know, a heartbeat away from the presidency. Sarah Palin, there was a very real chance Sarah Palin could have ended up president. And she's one of these evangelical Christians. Now, again, some will get annoyed with me for saying this, but my problem with evangelicals specifically, and those who, you know, the Dominionists and all these people, is they're actually, it sounds ridiculous to say it, but it is true. They are pro-Armageddon. And I don't want someone who's pro-Armageddon in control of nuclear weapons. Now, what I mean by that is you're talking about people who believe, and again, if it's harmless, I'm fine with it. If you want to believe there's an invisible man in the sky, as long as you're not hurting anybody, you know, yeah, have your imaginary friend. I don't care. Whatever gets you through the day. But evangelical Christians believe that the end of the world is a good thing, because that's when, well, some of them believe in the rapture, although not all of them do, but, you know, where, you know, people will be swept up into heaven and whatnot. But just more broadly, the idea that the end of the world brings about the second coming of Christ. And so it's a good thing. Armageddon is a good thing. These people are rooting for Armageddon, and that makes them dangerous. I mentioned Sarah Palin because she seems to me like exactly the type of idiot who I could imagine if she were president. And, you know, we get into some sort of tense nuclear standoff with whether it be Russia or North Korea or China or whomever, right? And she thinks that she's hearing voices in her head. She starts hearing the voice of God in her head saying, "It's time, Sarah. It's time. Do it. Launch those missiles. It's time to bring about the second coming. And I've chosen you, Sarah. I've chosen you for this moment." Right? Now, that is, of course, operating under the assumption that Sarah Palin or that any of these people actually believe in the nonsense that they preach. Because I think a lot of them are phony and they just play the part to, you know, like Trump does. I mean, Trump is not a religious man. Whenever, excuse me, he's not even good at faking it. I mean, he's good enough at faking it because evangelicals believe it and they love him. Of course, evangelicals are used to turning on their televisions on Sunday morning and seeing a con man in a $20,000 suit asking them to send them money. So I guess evangelicals have been preconditioned to accept someone like Trump in that sense. But Trump is so phony about it. It's like he doesn't even try that hard to seem authentic. It's like I forget the journalist, not John Heilman, the guy who always works with him. I forget his name now. But when he asked Trump in that one interview, so asking him about the Bible, you know, do you have a favorite passage or something? And Trump can't come up with anything. And then he's like asking him, well, do you like the New Testament or the Old, or are you more of an Old Testament guy or this and that? And Trump's like, well, you know, I think I like them both equally. It's like, oh, come on. You're not even trying, dude. You're not even trying. But you just assume that evangelicals will fall for it because you know what? They do. So there you go. I mean, these aren't critical thinkers, right? So it makes sense, I guess, that would happen. But so that's why a guy like having Mike Pence, even though I think Mike Pence certainly a more competent person than Trump, certainly would be more steady. Would not be, and in some ways would be, you know, I mean, he'd be more respectful. I can't imagine Mike Pence, tweeting out, insulting things about women and, you know, saying things that seem like racist dog whistles. And maybe he might do that. I don't know, but it's really, I mean, the guy's kind of a dullard actually. So I don't know. I mean, do we even really know what Mike Pence would be like as president? But, I mean, he's very, very flat in terms of personality. I don't even know. Does he have a personality? He's almost like a non-person. He's kind of a non-entity if you really think about it. But if he actually believes in the nonsense that he claims to believe in, I think he could be more dangerous than Trump. You know? Because as much as I think Trump is phony about his religious beliefs, I'd rather he not be someone who believes that Armageddon would be a net positive, right? So I take solace in that. But so in other words, I don't know, like it's such a catch 22, you know, we can all say all we want to, hey, wouldn't it be great if Trump were impeached and removed, but would it? I don't know. I honestly don't know. By the way, Rich Lowry of National Review said something in that column that I thought was interesting too, because I talked about this recently on my own show, but I want to bring it up here. You know, there's this MAGA people, and I think Republicans generally have this idea that the media hates Trump because the media, you know, the so-called liberal media or the lamestream media, as, you know, speaking of Sarah Palin, I think she was the first one to use that oh-so-clever term. You know, they think that the media hates Trump. And I can tell you, you know, as someone who works in media, the media does not hate Trump. The media, see, people, what people get wrong, and we're going to run out of time before I have a chance to fully express this the way it needs to be fleshed out, but I'll do the best I can. People get it wrong when they talk about, you know, the media. Like Republicans talk about, oh, you've got the liberal media, which is the mainstream media. They're also liberal. And then you've got the real media, which is conservative talk radio and Fox News as kind of a bulwark against that. And they get the paradigm all wrong. But liberals kind of get it wrong, too, because they talk about the mainstream media as being, you know, what Republicans would call the liberal media as being the real media. And it's the conservative media that's actually fake. And but that's a little closer to reality, but they don't quite get it either. The reality is, you know, you've got corporate media, and corporate media actually benefits from Trump. They don't like him, but they don't hate him either, because they make money off of him. MSNBC and CNN, they make a lot of money off of Trump being president. We got to go. We are completely out of time. I can hear the music. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you, Dr. Kevin. My name is Matt Connerton, and I'm sure I will talk at y'all soon, and Dr. Kevin will be back soon. And always a pleasure. Thanks, everybody. Have a great night.